This is Amber Sinclair from Lincolnshire, and a beautiful sunny day it's here, I must say. It's been a long time coming, but it's finally here. So hopefully the sun's shining wherever you are. Unless it's at night, of course, and then I hope it's nice and warm wherever you're listening. So this week, we're talking to alternative health expert Claire Snowden-Darling. Now, on her profile, on her website, she explains that she's a specialist in the menopause and hormonal imbalances, adrenal issues and chronic fatigue, and emotional issues such as anxiety and the connection between all of them. And she says she is passionate about educating people about the flaws that are inherent in the NHS approach to chronic conditions and what they do themselves to get their health back. She says she's equally as passionate about breaking through health myths that cloud the health industry and speaking the truth at a time when people need information they can trust. She has experience from working with thousands of people that you have the power to change your health and emotional outlook and create really deep fulfillment by making small, educated decisions every day that ultimately allow you to reclaim your emotions, free you of symptoms, and stop you being dependent on doctors and medication. Now, if you are wide-eyed and very sceptical at this point, I do not blame you. I was the same. But let's meet her and give her that opportunity to tell us how we can help ourselves and if we can take anything from that today that might improve our lives.
Good morning.
Hello there. Good morning.
Hi. How you doing?
Very well. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Tell me a bit about you and what you do and why you've got involved with our podcast this week.
Okay. So my name's Claire Snowden-Darling and I am an alternative health practitioner, and I predominantly these days work with adrenal stress, hormones and emotional transformation. Now, the reason that I do that is because this is a massive career change for me in 2004, after I had my daughter and we both nearly died in that process. And I was left with postpartum psychosis and postnatal depression and chronic fatigue. And after a few years of dealing with that, I actually started getting back into sort of things like nutrition and exercise, trying to find a way forward for myself.
Sure.
And my depression actually manifested in some very interesting ways. And it was only because I had a GP who was very on the ball that she said to me, "I think you're depressed." So after I'd had my daughter, I kept getting things like a kidney infection, and then there'd be a womb infection, and then there'd be another bladder infection. And after about 6 months of these sort of repeated infections, she turned around to me and said, "I think you're postnatal depressed," which I thought was hilarious. And at the time it just didn't make sense.
Well, they're all physical symptoms, aren't they?
And exactly.
You don't associate that with something that might be going on in the brain.
Exactly right. And she said to me, "Well, we need you to, you know, you're going to have to take two months off work." And at the time, I actually ran my own theatre company for people with learning disabilities. I was also part-time marketing. I was like, I had by that point, you know, a one-year-old. I'm like, no, no.
This is not possible. I'm sorry. Do you know my life?
No. So, I mean, I did actually take the 2 months off work and ended up in this sort of fury of, "Oh, great, well, I've got all this time now, so let me redecorate the spare bedroom and let me, you know, do all this stuff." And it was actually 2 months just before I was meant to go back to work that what I call the big black wave of depression hit me, and I realised that I was in quite some pickle. And the next 3 years was then navigating this depression. And like I said, I then got into sort of health and exercise and trying to find ways to help myself. And I actually ended up in this massive career pivot in going into alternative health and starting to understand how diet, lifestyle, mental attitude can radically affect our mental health. And actually how misunderstood mental health is. It actually was 5 years later that I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder because of my whole experience. And one of the key things I learned is that people who experience trauma on the level of something like PTSD, and actually in the case of my depression, they are often people who are copers, who just feel that they can deal with anything. And I even remember the health visitor coming around and asking me all the questions for the depression. And I'm like, no, because the idea of telling somebody else that I wasn't okay, which is what's going to happen on my watch. And so I'm so passionate about, this podcast is such a great idea because I think that mental health is dramatically misunderstood. I think there's so many people experience it in so many different ways, and there is so much that we can do for ourselves. And I also believe that on some level, now what I know about me, anxiety, for example, isn't my mental health issue. It's not one that I've really experienced, hugely in a life affecting way. But what I know about depression and what I know about anxiety is that they can become our superpowers when we learn how to handle them. So it's a bit like we're the X-Men and we have to go to X-Men college.
Yes, fair enough. Yeah, oh, I like that. Yeah, X-Men college. Yeah,
we have to go to the X-Men school, Charles Xavier's school, to learn how to handle this superpower that actually, when it's left to its own devices, will massively affect our lives. But when we understand what it's trying to tell us, now we can actually use it in a positive way. So that's why I'm really passionate about talking about mental health, because I think it's horribly misunderstood and stigmatized. And when we're in it, we don't feel that it's ever going to be something we can get out of.
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, but it's interesting listening to you talking about them as superpowers, because we talked with, I've spoken with lots of people on the podcast about, things that they've been through, but particularly autistic people who have got so much to offer in a very specialist way, because, and it is like their superpower. If we can turn these things into I'm like this, and that's great, because we're then referring to mental health on a different level, aren't we? Because I always have to remind myself that mental health doesn't mean poor mental health. Poor mental health means poor mental health, but mental health is just like physical health, and it's got to be managed, but it never is.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And in my line of work, I actually work with things like adrenal fatigue. I work with a lot of people with autoimmune conditions, awful hormonal imbalances,
No, I was just going to say, talk me through those quickly before you carry on your sentence, because I don't understand all of them. And I'm sure listeners, I don't think I'm being thick. So
Adrenal fatigue. So I'll just finish my sentence, because I've got such an awful early menopause brain that I'll forget.
Yeah, me too.
No memory. So I work with those things on a day-to-day basis. And when people come in expecting that we can provide you with this instant solution, my answer is we will look at a way that this is a manageable condition, but that's what we're talking about here. It's management. So I love that you said that. So yes, mental health and physical health. So adrenal fatigue, this is ultimately what happened to me and that put me into the big pickle that I was in for a few years. And we're seeing it play out right now with what they're calling long COVID. So our adrenal glands are the glands, they sit on top of our kidneys, and their primary job is to make stress hormone when we need it. That's what they're meant to do. Now, the problem is, and one of the reasons why I believe that mental health issues are on the increase, why autoimmune disease is on the increase, why women having, menopause at the moment is everywhere in the news, and why women are struggling so much with perimenopause, why we're seeing so many people with hormonal imbalances earlier in life, It's because our adrenal glands are massively overworked. So they were designed from an evolutionary perspective to spot that saber-toothed tiger, you know, with our eyes, and then adrenal glands, give me some adrenaline and cortisol and get me out of here. That's what they were designed to do. The problem is that our bodies haven't learned how to adapt to 2021. And so everything is a saber-toothed tiger, that fourth cup of coffee, the alarm clock, the kids shouting, the work pressure, financial pressure, what's going on in the world pressure. And so what happens is we're constantly producing stress hormone on top of stress hormone on top of stress hormone, which in itself becomes very inflammatory. It destabilizes our blood sugars, making us reach for quick release sugar foods. And those And then those quick release sugar foods, we actually have a lot of scientific evidence that they build up what's called endotoxins in our gut. And the endotoxins are linked in high numbers. They're linked to depression, suicidal thoughts, anxiety. So we have this massive connection between stress and even the stress alone can actually cause the inflammation that creates those endotoxins. Diet, the modern diets, along with all of this. So that's, and this actually, we tend to see that adrenal fatigue happens because of what I'd call low-level impact trauma. So just an incredibly stressful life and a lot of difficulty and challenge happening in your life, or a major event physically or emotionally. So in my case, nearly dying in childbirth, or a viral fatigue. So post-viral fatigue is now what we're seeing play out on the world stage in the place of long COVID. And all of the symptoms they're talking about, brain fog, joint pain, exhaustion. These are all what we've been calling for 20 years post-viral fatigue or post-viral syndrome, and all very, very linked to obviously not just physical health, but mental health as well.
Sure. I mean, that's just, it's just fascinating that we think about mental health and physical health as so different, but actually what you've just said is exactly that. One thing triggers the other, and yet we don't deal with the mental health side of things the same way as we deal with the physical health side of things. Even to this day, I mean, that's fantastic that you had an amazing experience with your GP. And I was quite lucky when I was in crisis eight or so years ago. But I still think, you know, what you're saying there about like a trauma, it's an injury, isn't it?
Yes.
It's either a physical injury or a mental injury. Maybe, you know, if we were talking in terms of those, if they were being researched in those,
yes,
with that frame of mind, we'd start looking at the two, because
absolutely,
it just seems to me it's either one or the other. Like, yes, you were saying, your PTSD, your postnatal depression was being shown up in water infections, kidney infections, things like that, and that is so common. I'm sure there's people listening who constantly get a sore throat, for example, a cold, water infections, and I find it amazing, because I read a book. Gosh, I found a book. Somebody gave me a book years and years and years ago by Louise L. Hay.
Oh yeah.
Now, she's very controversial, I believe, because she tended to put it out there like, you can cure yourself of cancer if you just say these affirmations repeatedly. But is she kind of on the right track, in as much as a lot of what happens to our body is because our brain is responding to something?
It is a really fascinating rabbit hole to start falling down. I mean, I'm going to be honest, I get really bored very easily. And this is now what I'm 14 years into this career, and it only just broadens, because the more you fall down the rabbit hole, the more there is to learn. So,
yeah,
you know, it's fascinating. Yes, absolutely. So there's two ways of looking at it. The first way of looking at it is, well, we are just atoms and molecules vibrating at a certain frequency. So our thoughts become physical manifestations in our body. That is one way, if you start falling down this rabbit hole into alternative health, that you can look at it. And there's a huge body of work which is called psychoneuroimmunology, which is about how our thoughts affects our nervous system and affects our immune system. So that is, there is huge bodies of work around it, and it is really fascinating. And even, you know, I've had the immense privilege of working with some incredible doctors in my career, and particularly for things like irritable bowel syndrome, which they talk about as being, well, it's a lifestyle issue. It's lifestyle. And it's so that they talk about, well, we need to change mindset, we need to change lifestyle, and it's probably food intolerances. So, you know, but we have to start looking at what is going on emotionally, which is why when I said at the beginning, I tend to focus these days on, you know, a sort of stress issues, the adrenal issues, hormones, and emotional transformation. And they don't sound like they sit together, but actually it's vast. And Louise Hay, yes, there's a lot of work similar to Louise Hay's out there, which is when you start looking at what is the core emotional issue behind what we do. So in the therapy that I do, we talk about that a condition can come from one of four places or be present in one of four places. So we call them the bees, like the little buzzy buzzy things.
Thank you for clarifying that for everybody listening. She's actually flapping her hands. It's quite amusing.
So the B stands for biochemical. So what are we putting on into our bodies? What are we putting around our bodies? You know, we're surrounded by pollution and pesticides and toxic chemicals. The emotions. So what are we thinking? How have we been programmed? What's our conditioning? How much fear, sort of propaganda are we exposed to that is affecting our ability to function? There's the electrical, which is, I mean, how much gadgetry now is actually affecting our bodies and our structural. So if you have put your back out, wow, you know about it. And that is going to affect your, you know, everything down to your bowels to how happy you can feel in a day. So those four areas are where our issues can stem from and therefore be fixed by. So Louise Hay really focused in on the emotional aspect. So she is in some kind of ways right. I think personally, I think it's a bit reductionist because whilst we are our thoughts, we also have what I like to call this meat suit that has certain requirements from us. So it has a bit like a car. It needs water. It needs fuel. It needs, you know,
oil. Yeah.
It needs things. And then to really be able to navigate our symptoms, yes, there is this emotional aspect. But what she did hit on, which is something that I bring into the way that I work, is that no matter how life affecting and no matter how or even terminal your condition is, there is gifts in it. And so a bit like I was saying about our mental health being a superpower, the gift, I mean, I've had, you know, friends and clients, obviously, who are terminal and have passed away. But in those, even those last few weeks, the realizations, the insights, the peace, that there's the gift, the gift that it can give to their family to watch that process. There is a gift in all of this. And it's when we stop looking at everything as this is good or this is bad, it's like, okay, well, what's the learning here? What's my experience? Because we're only here for a fleeting amount of time. So it's, for me, it's all about the experience. And that's where Louise Hay, I think, it is controversial, and it's not, this is where we get into the what's healing cancer.
Yes. Yeah. So her suggestion is that you can heal yourself just by telling your brain certain things, which of course is extremely simplified. But yes. I mean, however long ago did she write those books though? I mean,
a long time ago.
So she was well ahead of her thinking, like of her time, really.
Really clever.
And what you do, the fact that you're familiar with her stuff, that's showing that we are taking on board this sort of thing, this sort of idea that, like you say, it's a process, isn't it? It's how do we grow from here rather than, well, I've got this and therefore I can't.
Yes.
It's I've got this, where do we go from here?
Where do we go from here? So that for me is healing. And there's this big difference between healing and cure. And so we have been programmed into this belief of, well, I need to cure it. I need to fix it. I need to make it go away. As opposed to even if I can't get rid of this, just by accepting I have something that's not how I'd like it to be, Maybe I'm never going to be that person again, but the person I am going to become is going to, you know, has the potential to be wiser, probably less self-critical, kinder to myself, has broken free of some of my conditioning and social mm-hmm. pressure of being a certain way. Acceptance, which is, you know, huge. So that in itself is healing.
It is. And I laugh because I don't think there's been a single podcast that's gone by without that word, the acceptance. And I find it fascinating that it's the people that I've spoken to, like yourself, have all we tried to steer it this way. I know that Kenny, our producer, is very much sought after those people that have been through an experience, so that our listeners really, I suppose, in, for want of a better word, they trust us in as much as we have been there and we've come out the other side. But the attitude of the people that I've spoken to is just so much like that. It's the, okay, so what now? You know, it's that forward thinking. But I mean, you've got to be in a mental state that you can manage that sort of thought. What happens if you get stuck? Is that something that you deal with in therapy as well? If you're stuck, you know you need help, but actually you haven't got the energy to do anything about it. How can you help with that? And how?
So I think there's a couple of answers to that question. The first is, I'm a really big believer in timings. And forcing ourselves in from a, oh my gosh, I'm stuck, I must do something about it, I must. I'm a big believer in, okay, but is it the right time?
Yeah.
So maybe you're in shutdown because you actually need to be in some kind of shutdown for now, that there's almost a stasis. And I would have hated hearing this when I was in my really darkest places. I'd have been chic and sharp.
Well, yes, and there's probably listeners now rolling their eyes going, oh yeah, I know, it's all about timing. But
yeah,
but we've been through it, and you know that that is, and I totally agree with you. I read a book once that was talking about when your head is above water, when your chin is just above water and you can breathe, maybe try this.
Yeah,
just little bits at a time. But when you're under, you're under.
When you're under, you're under.
You said so. The second sort of approach would be.
So that's the first. So the first is absolutely timing. And if you are, I love that analogy. If you're under, you're under. And there were many, 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 many days. I can't even tell you. And it might have even been. I could probably say that there might have even been 4 days in a row where after the just getting up and making my daughter's breakfast, unless I could actually farm that out to my now ex-husband, I would have just been in bed with a pillow, you know, just the duvet over my head. Yeah. I cannot cope. There is no coping today. There is nothing other than this dark place. This is the safest place for me.
School run in the pajamas and go home and just get back into bed. You've got your child to school and that's enough today.
And not even being able to, you know, not even watching telly because I can't cope with anything else. It is just literally dark place because just anything in my consciousness is too much. So those are really acceptable. So I love that phrase actually, that if when your head's above water, great, but if it's not, you know, if it's just the sofa and a blanket, I call that radical self-care. And some days we just have to do that. I still have the odd day every now and again where it's just a pajama day and I'm not getting out of bed. And I might be able to do emails these days, but they're still in my pajamas in my bed.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So on the days where, okay, I can function a little bit, then they're the days to have, I think this is where we can take a bit of control of our mental attitude and kind of go, okay, if there's a day where there's even a little bit of hope, now I can start to do some research because there's so much out there. I mean, I don't think we've ever talked about mental health the way we talk about it these days.
Oh, God, no. I mean, just along with podcasts, you know, I can't believe how many podcasts are coming out that are having discussions just like you and me. I mean, yeah. I didn't want to change the world. I just wanted to, you know, speak to a few people around our local area who can give us some advice or maybe help us to make some changes or just actually just have someone else to listen to if they're stuck because they're not working, because they're suffering, you know, or whatever. But there are so many out there and they're fascinating. Yes. How many people we all seem to be in the same boat. I think we're the majority, the people yes. that can talk about it and understand it. Well, that's what it yes. feels like at the moment, which is fantastic.
I absolutely agree. One of my favorite phrases is this too shall pass. This too shall pass. So we might have a mental health condition for the rest of our lives, and that's okay. Because if we know that this too shall pass, it just means that on some days I can get out of bed. And on those days, I might be able to do loads and loads. Or I might not. And that's okay. But this too shall pass. The days of having my head under a duvet, that's not going to be forever. Yeah. So if you're stuck, but you're actually having a head above water day, I would really suggest, you know, that some books, podcasts. I'm also really what I have learned on my journey, and it might sound quite boring, but if it's a day where you are able to cope, that is the day to fuel your body properly. And so it's yep. so important to have, you know, good proteins, good fats.
To eat well. Yes, I see.
Eat well, fuel well. So that's the day to, you know, get some, you know, get a chicken in the oven, stick some veggies in, fuel your body when you have the energy and the capability.
Yes.
Because that will actually probably set you up better for the next day. And the more that we can do that a bit consistently, and if it's a great day, then I really recommend batch cooking and, you know, get some chili in the freezer, get some bits. On the bad days, you can just stick that, you know, food in the microwave and just reheat it, but you're still fueling your body.
Yeah.
I was talking to my partner actually this weekend, and we were saying about how, you know, as a nutritionist, we had a weekend off, and had a lovely weekend, and it's a little bit, you know, we bought some little desserts to eat, and that's, you know, I don't tend to eat sugar because actually it affects my mental health and my physical health. And so we were having this sort of little treat, and we were talking about how no one, it isn't this idea of perfect, you can't be the perfect nutritionist, or why would you want to be?
Yeah.
But actually we were talking about, we both did have COVID back in January, and I was saying about, I knew as soon as I started to get unwell, and we had it very mildly, but those were the days, I mean, I was still going to be standing up and cooking. And I, you know, we were talking about how when the 2 weeks that we were both unwell, it was almost like perfectly, because I knew that that's what my body needed to be able to get over this thing. And it was simple yeah. food. It was, you know, just sticking, like I said, just sticking a chicken in the oven and just some veggies and just making it really easy. But it was, we ate well because this is how we're going to get out of this. And so if you can do some research, we've got loads of free resources on our website and Instagram and recipes and all sorts. But if you can fuel your body properly on the days where you have the energy, you are really setting yourself up, because like I said, we really, our mental health is hugely connected to our digestion. There's a lot of books. There's a book called The Second Brain, which is about the gut brain axis, about how there's as much gray matter in our gut as there is in our brain. So whilst mental health is a really complex issue, and I'm not going to reduce it down to just diet, I do know that our diet is hugely impactful on our mental health, and particularly things like anxiety and even anxiety disorders. So when we're starting to get into the realms of things like OCD, a huge clinical success on people just changing their diets. Huge. It's quite phenomenal.
Wow.
So when we start to educate ourselves about what is it my body needs from me if I want to have a few more coping days rather than a few more not coping days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've experienced that in and out of that during lockdown and how the amount of sugar that I take on board, and I've I've got a friend, Jules, who tells me all the time that I have far too much sugar. And she tells me all the time that, you know, she has far too much sugar as well. But she's very much a believer of, she has an autoimmune disease, so she has fibromyalgia.
Right, yeah.
And she really, really suffers when she suffers. Yeah. And she knows exactly why. And it's just the sugar content, I think, in some people's diet. In my own diet, I'm not being
judgmental.
Because I'm the first one to, oh, I fancy something, open the cupboard. Even if they're mini, mini things, they still go for the chocolate. I'll still go for the chocolate, or I'll still go for, you know, the biscuit. But there are children growing up with parents that don't understand the effects of sugar, that are surely being primed for mental...
Yes.
Well, let's face it, and physical, because obesity yes. does come into it as well. Mm-hmm. But they're being set up to fall if yes. they've got such a high sugar diet.
Absolutely. I mean, my daughter's now 17, and I see it amongst her friends. I see it amongst their choices, because their choices these days are, oh, let's go down to town and get a Costa, or, but their Costa's isn't an Americano. You know, it's
yeah.
ones with all of the whipped cream and all of the sprinkles nice. On the top, and
yeah,
they're basically...
Yeah.
Yeah. So just high levels of sugar, but we're seeing teenage anxiety go through the roof.
Yeah.
There is no coincidence. And you're right, this isn't about being judgmental. I am, you know, the first one who can, you know, of course, we all enjoy the sweet treats. We are hardwired to enjoy them. This is a physiological yes. response. But actually understanding how blood sugar, this is ultimately what I do, this is what I teach practitioners to teach their clients. When we actually manage our blood sugars, there's interestingly, without getting too geeky on you, we think about hormones, we tend to think about, like, you know, estrogen, progesterone type hormones.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't think about how every single thing in our body runs off of hormones. So every time we put food into our mouth, we have a hormone response. And that hormone response can take us to wellness and joy, or ill health and anxiety or depression. So every time we put food into our mouth, it is that simple. It's quite phenomenal. But there is a blood sugar hormone, a very one that's not talked about, and it's got a very long name, so I call it, we'll just call it CCK, but a very it's actually responsible for anxiety. So if it's, and it's very, very carb sensitive, so sugar sensitive. So if we have a lot of sugar in our diet, guess what? Our CCK is going to go crazy, and so will anxiety. But why aren't we talking about that? Why aren't people talking about that?
Well, if that's the point, because if we're not teaching our teenagers particularly about this, are we not getting, you know, this, I mean, I've just been reading, I've said this in the last couple of podcasts, I bore people with this all the time, but the statistics on self-harming and suicide
yes.
in 5 to 19-year-olds is just yes. shocking. And the self-harming element of it, to me, and I'm thinking about back when I was a teenager and suffering with what I now realise was a depression from well within my late teens. That self, that want to self-harm is all anxiety driven.
Yes. Yes. And like I said, we have so much evidence now that shows that when we eat a diet particularly full of refined carbohydrates, and I'm going to explain those in a moment.
Sure.
Our gut bacteria, in response to those, they don't like it. So our gut bacteria produce something called endotoxins. And so that toxin doesn't sound like a good thing anyway. But those endotoxins go from our gut into our bloodstream. And the science shows that people who have high levels of depression, anxious thoughts, and suicidal thoughts, so even though self-harming would come into those kind of those area, they have greater numbers of endotoxins present in their bloodstream. So we can directly connect endotoxins, so a high carbohydrate diet, to anxious thoughts, mental health issues. I mean, that is incredible. So I just want to talk about what I mean by refined carbohydrates and sugar in general, because people aren't aware. So refined carbohydrates are foods that we have messed with. So it would be our sweets, cakes, biscuits, you know, unless they're made from home, from scratch, with proper butter, you know, old-fashioned cakes with proper eggs, proper butter, you know, good whole... Those aren't so bad for us. Yes, if you're trying to lose weight, you don't want to eat them all day every day. But when they've got proper food in them, but these days when you're buying processed stuff, they have not got the butter in them. They're meant to have shelf life, and a good cake, it's stale the next day. You know, a homemade cake, it's you've got a couple of days, then it's stale. So these refined carbohydrates, so things like crisps, nachos, anything that you basically buy in a packet, that would be a refined carbohydrate. So we know inherently that we sort of know they're not good for us. We know they're not the fresh fruit and veg. We know it, but we don't want to really believe it. So the other issue we have is that people don't know what a carbohydrate is. And this is, I remember being shocked. And I'd been a nutritionist for a long time before I even really made this connection. So a carbohydrate is anything that contains a form of sugar. So we only have three types of food on the planet. We have proteins, which would be our meat, fish, eggs, and sort of tofus, protein powders. We have fats, which would be all of our butter, nuts, seeds, cheese, avocados, all of those things. And then we have carbohydrates. So there's what we call non-starchy carbohydrates, which is all of our green leafy veg and our salads, which of course we all know we're supposed to eat abundantly. Then root veg, so potatoes, sweet potatoes, carrots, parsnips, that's a starchy carbohydrate. Fruit is a starchy carbohydrate. Our grains and beans, so our chickpeas, our legumes, our oats, our wheat, that's a starchy carbohydrate. That's before you get onto the alcohol, sugars, treats. So we could be eating a diet full of starchy carbohydrates. So, you know, toast, granola for breakfast. Have you a granola for breakfast? You think yourself you're doing it? I'm doing myself a favor. Got my porridge. Got loads
they
of
can be loaded though, can't they?
Loaded, because they are just carbohydrate. So when you start educating people, they say, but I'm eating loads of fruit. I say, yes, and it's got vitamins and minerals in it. So I'd rather you were having that than a bag of Haribo. But it's just sugar once it hits your bloodstream. And people are really stunned. So actually, a lot of the mental health issues we're seeing today have come from the low-fat diets that were so prevalent. You know, I'm
which are high sugar.
Sugar. Because if you take fat out, it's just carbohydrate.
Yep.
This fear around protein. Oh, well, I'm not going to eat any protein. I'm going to have my veggies. Well, we're just eating carbohydrates. So we've got so confused because we've forgotten how we're supposed to eat. We're supposed to have the proteins. We're supposed to have the good fats. We do need carbohydrates, but when our diet is just carbs, and a lot of people's are, that would be your classic toast for cereal or toast for breakfast, just a sandwich and crisps and maybe a chocolate bar for lunch, pasta for dinner. It's just so many carbs that our bodies are going to go into this endotoxin overwhelm, and it's going to destabilize our mental health.
Yeah, that's something that I always think about. I think when I do my son's lunch, I don't quite know how I've managed it, but he's not a bread person particularly. And I just go, oh, thank goodness for that, because otherwise it would be toast in the morning, sandwich for lunch. You know, I mean, we were never sent to school with a piece of fruit in our lunchbox, you know. I can't remember a piece of fruit. I remember a bag of crisps, a sandwich, and maybe a bit of cucumber or something on the side. But it just wasn't the way we were brought up, and therefore you've got a generation of parents who are now, you know, passing that on to their children, and the children, from my perspective, are being taught exactly the same diet and nutrition lessons. They are exactly the same. There is a plate and it's got all the different colors on and blah blah blah, but it doesn't actually relate to life.
No,
as,
it doesn't.
As much
it doesn't. And so the thing that I get so passionate about explaining to people is we might have got away with that in the 70s. We might have got away with it, although I'm having been born as a child of the 70s and knowing that my health was awful, I don't know that we did very much. And there are reasons for that. There are reasons for what we've done to the food since 1960s, actually. And there's a lot. It's we know why, and it's to do with the aggressive farming methods that we've used that have radically changed the actual chemical composition of our food. But the reason why I'm so passionate about it now is we definitely can't get away with this lack of nutrition now, because we're not just dealing with a bit of a lack of nutrition, which, like I said, we might have got away with in the 70s. We're now dealing with this huge amount of pollution, huge amount of pesticides, huge amount of chemical toxicity, the amount of fear that comes at us from our TVs. I mean, my gosh, this last year for people with mental health issues. And if you haven't had a mental health issue, you probably have one now with the pandemic.
Well, yes.
So we have to now take more responsibility, I believe, for our nutrition, because we've got to get, I call it scaffolding. If we're being bombarded from every aspect, we've got to put scaffolding from somewhere. And so that actually has to be, and like I say, on the good days when you are coping, okay, today's the day I'm going to actually, you know, cook something proper, batch cook, make sure that my scaffolding is in place, because there's a lot out there I can't control, but there are things that I can control.
Yeah. And do you know what I find very interesting at the moment? You might scoff at this, but I'm seeing more and more people throwing out like Gusto boxes. Mm. And what's the other one? There's two or three.
Stuff, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they send you the ingredients, the fresh ingredients to make up those meals yourself. So you don't even have to kind of find a recipe or find a recipe that's going to work for you, or that's, they've made it simple.
Yes.
And it seems to me that, I mean, these are people that I would have thought, you know, of a certain age, it would come home and cook anyway. But they may be using stuff in their cooking that's out of a jar or out of a packet that the Gustos of this new idea is taking out of it.
Yeah.
It's saying, well, this is everything that you can taste in that jar. Do it from scratch. It's all here, you know.
I'm a big fan. Anything that's getting people cooking again, I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's really fascinating.
Yeah, really.
The other thing I find really interesting is when someone like myself, I've always been on the larger side, and through, I say larger side, I'm a very average kind of size, 16 to 18, but I've always struggled to understand how these diet plans work, and how, for example, Slimming World, I say this every podcast, I play the single mum card. I am a single mum, and I like, you know, cooking is not something I enjoy. So I like meals to be done. And of course, they've got a whole range of food that is frozen and in there, you know, they've got a whole range of them. But again, it's to do with how they've given it a shelf life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it helps you to lose weight. So does it do that when...
Well, I don't really want to get into a Slimming World bashing situation.
No.
But the problem is that a lot of the diets that are around will be limiting things like fat, which is essential for hormones, essential. And it will also be often quite high in carbohydrates. So what will happen is, we know that any diet that's calorie restrictive means that to begin with, you will lose weight. Now, I did Weight Watchers in my 20s, and I know I lost that, you know, 3 stone, and it was quite fast, actually. But you will hit a plateau, because once your body, and everyone I know who's ever done any kind, I've hit my plateau. Now, the reason is that after a while of being in calorie restriction, regardless of what you're eating, your body's going to go, nope. Oh, I know what's happening here. And it goes into this famine mode. So we call it, the fancy term for this is metabolic adaptation. It changes your metabolism.
Yeah.
I know you're restricting my calories. So guess what? I'm not going to lose any more weight, because I think you're going to keep on restricting my calories. So I need to hold on to this for fuel in future. So we hit that plateau, and then people could be at Slimming World for years trying to lose the weight, And then never kind of getting past it, because actually they're not diets that fuel our body. They're diets that restrict our body too much. So we do need calorie restriction, but we need to do it in the right way. And we need to do it by having lots of good fats, lots of proteins, not just having fruit all day and thinking that we're being really good, not having a tiny, you know, have half a tin of tuna and a bit of lettuce. That's not fueling our body. We actually need a lot of, you know, quite a lot of food. It's just got to be the right food. So we'll lose weight a bit on those kind of processes, but you're absolutely right. The frozen foods, when you start looking at, I always say to people, I don't have a chemistry degree. So when I look on the back of a packet, if there's a load of chemicals in there that are long worded things,
yes,
I don't know what that is. I don't want to put that in my body, because food should be, it's out there. I can put it in my mouth. I can cook it and put it in my mouth. Mm. All these words that we don't understand, no, they are not meant to be going. They're not designed to go into the human body.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I once spoke to a scientist who said that he puts down all medical, physical and mental health decline since the 70s down to processed food.
Yeah,
I agree. You've probably seen me. I drink Pepsi Max. I have a couple of those a day, and everyone's always saying to me, "Oh my God, you can't! You know, that's so bad for you." Blah, blah, blah. And I always say, "What is it that's bad for me in it? It's sugar free. I'm not doing anything. I'm not, you know, it's doing nothing to my body." But I suppose the answer is, yeah, but it's loaded with chemicals. So what are they doing?
Well, that's the thing. So, and in the answer to something like Pepsi Max, it's loaded with aspartame. So you might have seen that word on the back of it. So aspartame is a sweetener.
Yes.
The sweetener aspartame, it still spikes our blood sugars. So when the body, when you put it in your mouth, remember I said you have that hormone response every time we put something in our mouth, your body thinks it's getting sugar. So it will produce insulin. Now, insulin is designed to bring sugar down, but it's also fat storage. And also when we have too much insulin in the body and we can't clear insulin out, that's actually diabetes. When we become what we call insulin resistant, so the insulin no longer does its job, that's when we start heading towards diabetes. So you can eat, you know, drink loads of Pepsi Max, still end up with diabetes because of this aspartame is spiking our insulin and we're going into fat storage. So when we say, oh, that diet drink, you know, there's that phrase, isn't it? That diet drinks make you fat.
Yeah, I don't like the fat word.
I don't like the fat word, but
well, no, but
that's one of those phrases, isn't it? All those diet drinks, they make you fat. It's actually because of the aspartame spiking your blood sugars, and then the insulin being released, and then the other thing that happens is once we've had insulin in our bloodstream, it then plummets our blood sugars back down. So guess what? Now we're going to start reaching for, because our blood sugars are too low, we start reaching for something sweet. So what happens is there's a direct correlation between aspartame and then wanting sugar to offset the aspartame. So we actually crave more sugar on the back of those sugar-free things. So anything that's fat-free, sugar-free, I like to think chemical storm, and what are those chemicals doing to the hormones that are destabilizing? And it's so simple. They destabilize your blood sugars. They put stress hormone into your body, which causes inflammation and affects our mood.
So it's having a physical and mental health effect.
Yes,
it's affecting
absolutely both,
isn't it? Everything that we put in our mouth is affecting both.
Everything we put in our mouth has a hormonal response that will affect both.
Which goes back to exactly that was what you said right at the beginning. And that's something that we, especially with depression, I think, is what you crave is comfort food.
Absolutely.
And that comfort food, that lasagna, chips, cheese on bread or on toast, and, you know, those tortillas and, you know, all of those sorts of stodgy, which, again, are your refined carbs, aren't they?
And so when you think about it, I'm very visual. So I like to think about the bacteria in our gut. So this gut brain axis, you know, that's how we're going to get good mental health, is by having a happy gut. And there's loads of research out there now and loads of information. But if that is, you know, really well known, good, happy gut equals happy, you know, good emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it, like I said to you about these bacteria that produce these endotoxins, I like to think about the endotoxin being like zombies. And so then yeah. when we start eating anything, the zombies turn them into more zombies. So we start perpetuating this problem of, absolutely, the more comfort food, the more refined carbohydrates, the more and more and more of these sort of like zombie bacteria in our gut, that even when we eat something good on one day, well, I've got too many zombies. So it does take a little bit of discipline. And so if you are stuck with mental health, one of the things you can do is go, right, I am going to commit to a week. Now, what I don't want people doing is thinking that they're going on a diet, because that's restrictive. I mean, we can be eating delicious food. You know, lots of, have chips, but have them with a load of fat, so cheese on the top, and have some protein. So, you know, actually put some, you know, roast chicken or whatever, but just offset, just have them with the fats, have them with the protein, and that will start to balance out your blood sugars.
Whoa. So it's really easy. Cheese on my chips.
Have cheese on your chips, yes.
I always think about chips as like, you know, I'll say to my son, you know, if he'll have, I don't know, something and it'll be deep fat fried, and then he'll ask for something else and it'll be, you know, covered in breadcrumbs or something. So you do realize that's been deep fat fried as well. Just because I'm putting it in the oven, you know, it doesn't mean that it wasn't originally deep fat fried or whatever. And those fats to me signify being overweight, you know, if you were to eat fried food all day. So how is that fat different?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there are good fats and there are bad fats. And the good fats are basically anything that's naturally occurring in our foods. So nuts, cheeses, avocado, good old-fashioned meat fats. So let's all get eating like delicious pork crackling. Like, let's eat our pork scratching.
Not this for
is
that.
Good
yeah.
fat, good fat. We need this fat so much. We're so starved of it from 40 years of low fat diets, and that is why we're seeing so much of this, of the issues. The bad fats are actually vegetable oils, anything that's refined, really, really refined. So things like sunflower oils, and the stuff, if we're going to take an oil, heat it so high and then put our chips in it, it's those overcooked oils that changes them. That cooking, the heating actually is then what we hear this phrase, hydrogenated.
Oh yes.
Or trans fats. That's the American word. That's what's happened. They've been heated so high, their chemical composition has changed. They cause inflammation. They cause weight gain. It's the inflammation that comes off the back of them, because they're toxic, that causes the weight gain.
But,
you know, eat your avocado, eat your cheese, eat your, you know, seeds, nuts, nut butters, get all of that into your diet, your pork scratchings, eat them.
So is olive oil better to cook in? You know, if you were pan frying, you know, I say fry, but obviously I'm not a person to fry in oil, but I'd use one of these sprays, you know, for example. But isn't olive oil spray a better?
Yes, olive oil spray is much better. Good old fashioned butter, tallow. You can buy in the supermarket blocks of dripping, and they're about 40p. It's so cheap.
No,
that's what we used to cook in.
Yes, I remember my mum draining it from the saucepan into a little ramekin, and then using that. She used to put that on toast with Marmite.
That's exactly what I do.
Delicious. No.
Yeah. Scraping up the bacon dripping. Delicious.
But just to clarify for anybody listening, that doesn't mean you can then have a high sugar diet as well, because that would just turn you into a house. I mean, you would be the size.
Well, the irony is that, I mean, and because also, you know, let's also talk about the fact that we need to move our bodies for good physical and mental health. So we do need to move our bodies. But the irony is that if you start putting those good fats in, and yes, you might put on weight to begin with, but what will happen is when you've got the right proteins and the right fats in your diet, your sugar cravings will stop. So you won't want to be craving the high sugar foods. That's the key here.
I think I can this sounds really silly because I was just about to say, I think I can believe that. I mean, I know this is fact. This is evidence-based. I know you're the specialist, but I'm looking at it purely, like my listeners are, purely from a, well, how does that work kind of way? But say, for example, is this just related to sugars in foods? I mean, I know that we talked about the Pepsi Max, but say, for example, you know, you have a high-fat, a low sugar diet, but you still fancy alcohol, for example. Is alcohol and sugary drinks, are they just as bad as food? I mean,
yes, absolutely, and in fact worse, because very often it's when we chew food that the brain gets signals around what's in it. So by the chewing, your brain's able to go, oh, there's a bit of that and there's a bit of that, and so on the back of, oh, there's a bit of that, it then produces the right hormones. Whereas, for example, the sugary drinks, they're in your mouth for such a short period of time, they're hitting the bloodstream before the body's had a chance to prepare. So now we're talking about masses of sugar directly impacting into the bloodstream, and then the body struggling to make the insulin. And then when it does, it's loads of insulin. I mean, this is just why we end up walking into diabetes, because the body can't clear the sugar down. Mm. So it's really difficult. And yeah, alcohol's the same. But here's the thing. We could end up, I mean, we're focusing on diabetes because we're talking about sugar, and that is the quickest, that's the easiest correlation to make. But
yes, yeah.
But we can end up with diabetes from stress alone, because cortisol, the stress hormone, takes stored sugar in the body and puts it as sugar into our muscles and bloodstream, so we can run away from those saber-toothed tigers. That's its job. It goes, there's danger, we're going to have to run a while, quick, put sugar into the muscle so that we can run. That's how the human body works. So if we're just functioning on stress, 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 we are going to end up with, and as soon as that blood sugar, those sugars are in the bloodstream, blood sugar spike, insulin's produced, the CCK goes off, anxiety, low mood, depression, I'm reaching for alcohol, I'm reaching for sugar. So if you're craving high sugars, alcohols, if you're an adrenaline junkie and you're just obsessed with work, but you're experiencing low mood, this is why I call it the whole health approach, because we've got to look at everything. Why are you a workaholic? Why aren't you able to have any quiet? What is it you're scared of, you know, addressing? Is it your relationship? Is it that you don't actually, some stuff you don't like? Because this is where mental health is our superpower. It's trying to tell us that something isn't right. And it's trying to get us to look actually within and start to make some changes.
And that, I think, is probably something that even if someone's listened to all of this, I must confess, a little bit like me, and going, well, I'm not going to be changing my diet overnight just because I've been told this, because it's so ingrained in my brain. I mean, you've certainly given us lots and lots to think about, and it's interesting, because when my friend Jules listens to this, she'll be laughing her head off. She'll, I told you. And it definitely is moving forward for people like me that do still suffer with days where I crave sugar and I just want to sit. That if we could take away one thing, I think it would be that if you're less stressed, that will create less need.
Absolutely, 100%. And I like to talk about it as, this is a journey. It's not an overnight destination. So if I look back at the 26-year-old where, you know, all hell was about to let loose and that trauma was about to hit, compared to the 45-year-old I am now, you know, I used to eat regularly, eat junk food. I was, you know, drinking Diet Coke every day. I was everything. You know, my coffees had a couple of pumps of caramel in them. I didn't really exercise. I was eating a lot of the stuff that you've talked about. I was, you know, spraying myself with perfume, so toxic chemicals. I was just living what I'd call a pretty normal life. But my health then decided, I had no choice. I had to do at least one thing. So I always say to someone, take one step. Mm-hmm. One step. So even if the step is, I'm going to swap my Pepsi Max for soda water that I can then squeeze some fruit into, even just smash some strawberries up into it and make it really tasty. Okay, that's one step. That's one step. What can I do now? Because I've achieved that consistently for a few days. What can I do now? Okay, now maybe I can address my stress. What's really stressing me out? We know when we're stressed. You know what? If you're watching the news and it stresses you out, don't watch the news. I haven't watched the news for 10 years and I know what's going on in the world because people tell you, or if it's safer for you, just check a headlines once a day. But the news, if you have got stress issues or mental health issues, the news is not your friend.
Oh, and that's not just the media on the television or on the radio or the news that's important that people want and should hear. This is the news from Facebook. Yes. These are news feeds from social media as well. You know, the more that you scroll through and check other people's lives, and you know, the more notifications you're then sent about them, and therefore you feel you need to look at them, and you just absorb so much again that you can't, that you maybe can't cope with, and that is just adding to the stress.
And look, we're doing that because we're trying to distract ourselves from how crap it feels in our body or in our heads. Or we're looking for connection. It's one of two reasons. We're either numbing ourselves to what's going on for us, or we're looking for connection.
Yeah.
So if it's numbing, instead of the mindless scrolling, put on your favorite tune. Even if you're just lying on the sofa, listening to a piece of music that you like, or a podcast, or an audio book, do that instead of the scrolling. If it's because you want connection, message a friend. Reach out, find a, if it's a Facebook forum, anything, but reach out and have connection. That's the beauty of the modern world. Is I think back to people in the 50s who were lonely and without connection. They didn't have anywhere to go.
Everyone was miles away, but now you're only a click away from people.
Exactly.
Use it. Yeah.
So these are what I talk about. These little things that we can do to take control of our health and mental health back. So that's how we start to reduce stress. And then, then eventually the sugar cravings start to change because we're actually living a sort of happier, more fulfilled lifestyle. And then bit by bit, but it's a journey and it might take you the rest of your life, or you might get there in a few months and then it's management. But that's okay.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, lots and lots to think about. I mean, it's just what you don't know about nutrition in relation to the mental and physical response in the body. I think we'd be able to write on the back of a postage stamp. You communicate all this through individual therapies, or is that you mentioned a website and Instagram? You said there were resources on there as well.
Absolutely. So there's a couple of websites. So my personal website is clairesnowdendarling.com. The great thing about my name is there's only me and my daughter with it. With our surname. So clairesnowdendarling.com. My business name is balancedwellness.co.uk. So Balanced Wellness. Now on there, on both sites, there's actually a tab that says free stuff. And on the free stuff, there is loads and loads of talks. There's loads and loads of, we have a podcast, my business partner and I. There's loads of information specifically for people who are actually, our podcast was called Consciously Healthy. It's like, it's that connection of, I'm now conscious that my diet could have an impact on my health. What do I do about it? Mm-hmm. So, or my emotions, or you know, anything.
Yeah,
so,
I'm there. I'm definitely there. So that's something I'm definitely going to go across and do. And brilliant. And I say this every week, and I haven't got around to doing it, but I need to put, and I will put this week these addresses in the blurb so that people can access them. And there was also the book that you mentioned as well, The Second Brain, about the gut brain axis. I think that's possibly something that we'll add to that list of resources as well.
But so if anyone wants loads to... there, and loads on Instagram as well. We are very, very prolific on Instagram. So that's either again Claire Snowden Darling official or balancedwellness.co.uk. So balancedwellness.uk. So much free stuff for people to access.
That's fantastic. Super. Well, I think I'm going to have a cup of tea and head over there now, because that's really interesting. I won't add a biscuit. I will just say no to the biscuit. I feel that I owe you that after an hour of telling me about sugars, and I'm going to omit the biscuit.
have your biscuit, but with a small handful of nuts alongside it.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure I have nuts. This is not something I have in the house. A handful of raspberries. Oh, no, that's your sugars again. You see, this, I've got to change my whole way of thinking. I'm going to go on your website and have a look at those resources. Be good to just, my knowledge needs to improve first, I think. And I think that's probably the case for a lot of people listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
But thank you so, so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been gorgeous talking to you.
And you, really, really nice to meet you. And check out our other podcasts as well, because we've had some really, really interesting guests, and you've offered us a completely different, there's been nobody that's really offers us the same outlook, looking at the, like you said, the mindset, the lifestyle, the nutrition, which is really, really core to making us well, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Balancedwellness.co.uk. One thing at a time. One less biscuit. Brilliant. Oh, Claire, that's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great.
So that was Claire. And I think there were a lot of things in there that you could break down and listen to at a later date, perhaps in smaller sections, that might contribute something more positive or something helpful to your life. I think I'm going to go on the website, I'm going to have a look at those resources, and maybe just change one thing, like she suggested, because ultimately we want to be happy, we want to be able to sort this ourselves. Now I'd like to leave you with a song that kind of sums up what we've been talking about today in a much, much less clinical way. Mariah Carey does it better. This is Hero.